Into Becca or Biela? Yeah, mate.
Hey, winner, how you doing?
Good, B, my friend. How is it going over in Durban, South Africa today, my friend?
Yeah, everything's going pretty good. Lovely weather as per usual.
Oh, that's all right, mate. Beautiful, mate.
Yeah, how's things over in Australia?
Oh, mate, so been a huge week in a sport as usual, and obviously we're here to talk EPL, and obviously I'm an Aussie Rules fan, and my Tigers beat the Brisbane Lions yesterday. I was live there at the MCG, and we're going to actually play off in the finals in 2 weeks up at the Gabba in Brisbane. So, obviously, a different code, but that's the Aussie rule style. But, yeah, that was the Tigers in a row looking ominous.
Yeah, I actually watched a little bit of that, a bit of the footy. But, I mean, obviously, it's quite tough to follow it in terms of time difference. But I watched, like, just had a squiz over all the results. And, yeah, looking pretty good for you guys.
Yeah, mate. So, yeah, pretty happy. And I actually noticed, what, you're a Brisbane Lions fan, are you?
Sort of following the Lions just because, I mean, it's pretty stupid, really, because I was looking for a footy team, you know, when I was down that part of the world, and found a Brisbane Lions jersey, and I was like, sick, I'll get it, support the Lions now. And I think they were pretty shit when I started. I think they were like kind of what I think bottom of the ladder back then. I'm not sure, them and Frio and the Dockers, but I think they've had a bit of a turnaround in fortunes this season.
Yeah, mate, they finished 17th last year and risen to top two. They finished second on the ladder, mate. So it just goes to show, no matter what code, if you get the roster right, you get the coaching staff right, and you get the belief right, anything is possible at the professional level in sport, and really any level of sport, really. But yeah, that's going to be a huge final in a couple of weeks. But obviously, we're here to talk Winno and Bean, talk EPL, mate, and it was great talking to you last week about all the major talking points. But look, mate, we'll kick it off. A couple of results early Saturday morning in Australian time. We had Chelsea 3-2 with a win over Norwich. And Aston Villa really put Everton aside with a 2-0 victory. Mate. So what'd you make of those results early on in the EPL round? Just gone.
Thanks for having me on, Winno. Yeah, look, it was an interesting start to the weekend, I think, because many would have expected Everton to kind of get the business done against Villa. Villa are still new to the Premier League and they hadn't really gotten their footing back yet. And you kind of thought with the recruitment that Everton had done, they'd get the result. But, you know, that first goal just kills Everton. And then that late sucker punch, I think it was the 93rd minute when Everton were obviously pushing for that equaliser and then Villa hit them on the counter. So it's a tough one to take for Everton because they shouldn't be losing that. They're just worried about them in terms of their recruitment. I mean, I'm not worried about them. I mean, being a Liverpool fan, I'm actually quite happy that Everton aren't doing too well. But in terms of just football sense, I think it's a bit worrying for them because they've brought in a lot of people, but it just seems it's quite hard to kind of see where they're going with their recruitment and the direction. It's going to be a long season for them. I still think they'll be perfectly comfortable within the top half of the log, but I don't think they're going to be hitting the heights that they would have hoped to hit at the start of the season.
Yeah, interesting you say that. Yeah, there was a killer blow through Wesley at the 95th minute mark, and you know, Everton were trying to push to get the equaliser late, and they were doing a lot of attacking, but they just couldn't find that last pass, that last sort of that last link of play that would obviously ultimately end up getting them a goal. But yeah, look, it was a good effort. I mean, 2-0 to Aston Villa. I know a lot of my mates up in Birmingham would be quite happy with that result. But obviously, Chelsea 3-2 over Norwich. What'd you make of that game? Chelsea, you know, on paper, Mason Mount scored again, I noticed. But it was actually Todd Cantwell who opened the account for Norwich, and they were pretty competitive, the boys from Norwich.
You know what? Like, this Norwich side is, they've really come into the Premier League and they've really kind of outdone a lot of the expectations of them so far. I mean, obviously, it's only three games into the season, so we can't really read too much into it, but you know, I think a lot of people expected Norwich to come in and have a bit of a struggle, but they've done really well. And you can see the goal that they scored in the first game against Liverpool with Timo Pukki was a really good goal. His hat-trick in the second game. And then even against Chelsea, you know, they just showed that they're going to be quite hard to play against and really, really going to, you know, kind of make a good fist of staying up in the league. And yeah, I mean, it was a good game to watch, you know. And I mean, you know, obviously as a fellow top six rival, you know, like it would have been better if Chelsea didn't get the points. But I mean, at the end of the day, it is good to see Frank win his first game for Chelsea. You know, he really needed that, being the legend that he is. And it's really nice to see that he's won that game using the youth policy that Chelsea are kind of now looking to be pushing.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, with Mason Mount. Yeah, with Mason Mount getting a really good goal and Tammy Abraham getting two really well taken goals, it's really nice to see that from a Chelsea perspective. And
Tammy Abraham really stepped it up. Obviously, he opened the account for Chelsea, and then got a goal at the 68th minute, which put the result beyond doubt. To Norwich's credit, they nearly did score yet again, but they weren't able to get the equaliser. But it's really good to have a very open competition at the Premier League level.
I mean, that's what you want, isn't it? You know, like the last thing you want is a repeat of the Serie A or the Bundesliga, where you know that every time, or La Liga, where you know that every time one of the top teams plays a lower side, it's going to be 4-5, 6-0, whatever. So it's really nice to kind of have, excuse me, it's really nice to have a league where you know that even Chelsea, who, as we mentioned last week, you know, the serial winners, like winning, I think they've won 14 trophies in 16 years. So even they can go to a newly promoted side and struggle. So it's really nice. It's really nice to see that. It makes for really good watching, you know, and it just makes for a good all-round entertaining product.
Certainly, mate. Now, I can't believe when I woke up in the early hours of the morning the other night, Man United went down, mate, and Rashford, he missed the penalty. I mean, what do you make of that result? Because that really is a shock loss for Man United.
You know, I said at the start of the season when Man United beat Chelsea 4-0 that I think that, I mean, it sounds stupid to say, but I think that result could have been a pretty bad one in that it would have given them a false sense of security, thinking that they may be a bit further on the journey than they actually are. And this Crystal Palace result has just showed that this Man United side's not really ready to step it up yet. They're going to struggle this year. I mean, it's to lose to Crystal Palace at home is just atrocious, isn't it? Like,
look at the rosters. Look at the value of the rosters. It's, you know, I mean, a loss like that really puts you on the back foot if you're trying to be in contention in that top four, you know, which they are year in, year out.
Yes, I mean losing at Old Trafford, obviously, for Man United fans, that has to be unacceptable. I mean, I can, you know, Crystal Palace haven't been looking really good at all so far. I mean, people maybe talk, like a lot of people have been talking about them possibly being in the relegation scrap again this season. You know, and for them to come over to your house and do you 2-1 it's a bit of a shocker, and especially the way that Palace got that winning goal. Because, you know, United pushed. When Rashford got the penalty, I kind of think it was an interesting one because of obviously what had happened last week with the whole Pogba penalty situation. And, you know, we've got two penalty takers and kind of, you know, who will take this one? It's a laughable situation. But, you know, when that happens, you think to yourself, what's really going on? Is the manager really saying to the players, oh, just go out there and sort it out amongst yourselves? And if he is, you know, that's very worrying because this is a top level Premier League side, not a schoolboy footy side. You know, it's just like, oh yeah, decide what you want to do on the field. And I mean, there'll be a lot of talk around that. I mean, I still think Rashford should remain United's main penalty taker, but there'll be a lot of talk around that specific miss. And obviously the fact that it's led to them missing out on another 3 points.
Sorry to cut you off there, but the thing is, just in general play, it really never looked. Obviously, Jordan Ayew got the goal at the 32nd minute mark. As soon as they got 1-0 up, it never really looked like Man United. Never, like in general play, it never really looked like. Obviously, they got the equaliser through Daniel James at the 89th minute, but
it really
never looked like Manchester United were going to ever win that game. Just in general play, like. It's not like, you know, a good side comes out and they're spraying the ball all over the park and they just can't get it at the back of the onion bag. But for some reason, yeah, Crystal, to their credit, they really if anything, they were the better side throughout 90 minutes of football.
Look, I think the intimidation factor of Old Trafford's disintegrated now. Just the very fact that, I mean, obviously Palace have come there and they've scored that early goal, maybe against the run of play, and maybe, you know, to them that would have been the plan that they would have been looking for, you know, kind of a smash and grab, get a goal, sit back, hold them out. But when United have equalized late on in the game, you know, everyone would have been thinking, right, this is where United now are going to come in, bit of stoppage time, you know, they're going to get that winning goal. But the very fact that Palace haven't sat back, you know, after conceding that, they haven't thought to themselves, right, you know, we've just dropped 2 points. Let's just sit back and make sure we walk away with 1 point. The fact that they've carried on to push forward and the fact that they left back is in the Man United box attacking to score the winning goal in the 93rd minute is absolutely ridiculous. It shows that Palace aren't really intimidated by the prospect of playing at Old Trafford, you know, because back in the day, most teams would have gone to Old Trafford. You know, if they'd managed to take the lead, they would have tried to hold on to it. But if they lose it at the end, they would have thought, right, let's just make sure we get away with a point. Whereas Palace were like, hang on, we can actually still carry on pushing here. And that's what they've done. So even after Man United have equalized, Palace have still pushed forward and their left back gets the goal. And I mean, it's shocking goalkeeping from David De Gea because you should never get beaten. the ball's kind of squirmed under his body to go in the near post. Shouldn't get beaten like that. But credit to Palace for pushing. You know, credit to Palace for getting their fullbacks forward, carrying on with the attack. Just kind of, instead of, you know, when everyone would have expected them to sit back and kind of start taking an onslaught for Man United, they decided, nah, we're worth the 3 points here. Let's actually try and get them. And they've, you know, in all fairness, they've gone out and they've got them.
Certainly. And yeah, I mean, it's just a great, I love seeing that. I love seeing the underdog, especially away from home. Old Trafford, as you said, isn't really the haunting ground for, it's not as you said, it's not as intimidating for most sides going there these days. And it certainly keeps, you know, it open for a really, really close and exciting English Premier League season. Now, mate, I can't wait to talk at this point here, mate. Liverpool v Arsenal. I mean, yeah. This was, you know, I don't know how you'd describe it, but it was a pretty big result. But really, the big talking point, obviously, you're a Reds fan and you're going to be all happy. 3-1 winners. But, you know, we mentioned, are Arsenal serious with David Luiz, you know? I'm not sure he's really getting a run with the Brazilian national side, but he's obviously, mate, he was part of the 2014 World Cup and 2010 World Cup sides. And, mate, he's a 31, 32-year-old veteran. Backman, he's you know, he's played all around the world. And he really cost his side 2 goals over the weekend. So, you know, that solution probably ain't working for Arsenal at this point.
You know, I think what Saturday kind of showed was just the gulf in class between Liverpool and Arsenal at the minute. Liverpool are, I mean, I'm not just saying this as a Liverpool fan. Of course, I'm saying it as a Liverpool fan. However, like, Liverpool are really the cream of the crop at the minute. You know, the way that Liverpool play and the way they attack, the way they defend, the way they get forward, the way they control the midfield is just, it's synonymous with what Man City are doing, with what Barcelona are doing, with what Bayern Munich have done in the Bundesliga, with what Juventus doing. What Liverpool's doing at the minute is just incredible. And the fact that they've, you know, dispatched of Arsenal with only really 15 minutes of getting out of second gear, because the first half was just, it was crossing practice, wasn't it? Where Arsenal allowed Liverpool to get onto the ball. And because Arsenal decided to play narrow, Liverpool spread their attack quite wide. So it was literally Trent Alexander-Arnold and Andrew Robertson just pumping crosses in, and Arsenal's defence obviously dealing with it and then looking to hit Liverpool on the break. So most of the first half was just crossing practice. It was just getting the ball out wide to the fullbacks and then crossing it in. And, you know, obviously they got the goal. And then with that 15-minute spell in the second half where Mo Salah absolutely skins David Luiz for an absolute joke, and then where David Luiz pulls his shirt for the penalty, that to me was the only period in the match where Liverpool really looked like, all right, we up for it, you know. So it was like 15-minute period of the game where Liverpool like, all right, let's step it up a little bit. They've done that, got the goals, and then they've kind of been like, all right, we're 3-0 up, let's just see it home. You know, it's disappointing to concede that goal, but I think they really controlled that game. And
I did.
With regards to Arsenal, I think They've done good business. I think I really like the look of this Nicolas Pepe guy. Like, he gave Virgil van Dijk a horrible, horrible, horrible afternoon, and not many footballers will do that. I mean, Lionel Messi, Luis Suarez, Gabriel Jesus, Sergio Aguero, Raheem Sterling, the best of the best, you know, Lewandowski and all of them, the best of the best have come up against Virgil van Dijk, and he hasn't struggled like he did on Saturday against Nicolas Pepe. So I really think that Arsenal have signed really well in getting him into the squad. Danny Ceballos is a good footballer, but I think that type of game is not the game that, you know, I think the Liverpool game was more for a Lucas Torreira, someone who'd sit back and kind of absorb the pressure, because that's what Liverpool would be doing, because Arsenal were playing largely without the ball and looking to hit Liverpool on the break, where I think Torreira would have maybe soaked in the pressure, but more than a Danny Ceballos. So I thought they've really recruited well up front and kind of in the midfield area, but their defense is absolutely atrocious. The Kieran Tierney will be a good signing, but David Luiz, like,
Do you think they thought when they brought him across that he was just sort of like a stopgap? On paper, it looks good. Luiz, you know, Brazilian defender. Yeah. But do you think maybe, obviously he's closer to the end than he is to the start of his career. Do you think maybe he's lost the yard and maybe the game has gone past him a little bit as far as the pace of the game?
So David Luiz is a good centre back. Let's not be overcritical of him. He is still a really good centre back, but he's a good player on the ball. So when you play in a side that's kind of lesser to you, you know, when you're playing against the Burnley at home, or you're playing against one of the lower sides, David Luiz is good to have, because on the ball he can spot a pass, you know, he can kind of read play. But once you start attacking him, and once you start running onto him, that's when he kind of struggles and starts getting a bit erratic. Like, you could see he was struggling to live with Roberto Firmino all afternoon, and what Firmino was doing was just kind of laying it off into Salah, and then, you know, it's just he got found out twice, and it's just it's a bit of a worry for Arsenal. But the good thing for Arsenal is they won't play too many teams as good as Liverpool, if you know what I'm saying. I mean, I think David Luiz will struggle against City, of course. Against Man United, it'll be a tough one. Against the likes of United, it'll be a tough one, because I still don't think Martial is all that. But I think Rashford could give him a tough time against... I think he'll be okay against Spurs. Like, you know what I mean? So there's not too many teams that will push Arsenal as hard as Liverpool do. So they will be okay, but I still don't think he's the signing that takes Arsenal to the next level. You know, it's kind of like a Petr Cech signing, when they signed a good player from Chelsea, but it was definitely a player who had his best years behind him. And most teams wouldn't let someone go to a rival if that person was still performing at the peak of their powers.
Certainly.
Yeah.
And look, one last one in that game. I did. you mentioned earlier Trent Alexander-Arnold. He was assisting with a lot of goals there. But Fabinho, when he crossed that ball and Mohamed Salah scored at the 58th minute, I thought that was all class by Fabinho. What were your thoughts on that?
Yeah, Fabinho doesn't get the credit he deserves, to be honest. You know, because when everyone talks about Liverpool, everyone talks Mo Salah, Virgil van Dijk, and that front three. But I tend to think, alongside Alisson, van Dijk and Mo Salah, that Fabinho is one of the first names on that team sheet. You know, like, in a very full-strength, strong Liverpool side playing a massive, massive game, Fabinho has to start. Like, he's just... the way he breaks down play is really underrated. And then the way, once he gets that ball as well, once he has that vision to kind of spread it and kind of read the game from a different perspective than the rest of us, is just... it's ridiculous, you know, like... You can go back to last season in the Champions League semi-final against Barcelona, where he got booked really early for a foul on Lionel Messi. I think it was in the first half, like the first 20 minutes or something. So everyone was kind of worried now. Everyone's like, all right, Luis Suarez is obviously going to really pressurize him and, like, maybe look to get him sent off. And all he's done is his step back, but he's still gotten involved. Like, he stepped back and he's read the game even better, completely shut Barcelona out, completely controlled the game without getting into trouble. So Fabinho is a really intelligent footballer. You can just watch him play, and I think that's one of my favorite signings, I think, of recent times at Liverpool. Like, just how good he is. And, you know, over the years, we've been talking about Man City having Fernandinho in that role and how Liverpool needed someone in the similar ilk to Fernandinho. Well, I think we've got him, and I think he's maybe got a bit of a better passing range than Fernandinho. So it's quite interesting. I really, really like what Fabinho brings to the side.
Yeah, mate. Well, you'll be happy, man. And yeah, we'll just we'll move along. But yeah, 53,000 there, and yeah, mate, they're looking ominous for the season thus far. But we'll move along. Man City expect a result. They jumped on over Bournemouth 3-1 in the end. Sergio Aguero, mate, he's an absolute star, scoring twice. He opened the account. Also, Raheem Sterling scored one just before the half, and Harry Wilson for Bournemouth. Time on into the 45-minute mark, scored at the 48th to bring it back to 2-1, but 3-1 in the end, and that pretty much went to script, that result.
Yeah, it was what you expected, wasn't it? I mean, Man City aren't going to get beaten by Bournemouth. I mean, it's harsh to say because Bournemouth are a decent side, but they're not going to struggle too much. There was maybe a 10-minute period where firstly, City went 2-0 up, and you kind of thought, right, routine results. City should kind of run away with this, maybe score two or three more in the second half. Then Harry Wilson set piece, just absolutely brilliant. And it's good because Harry Wilson's a Liverpool player, so he's still contracted to Liverpool. So
yeah,
it's
yeah.
good. It's good that he's doing this, you know. So send them out on loan to score against City. But look, you know, when Bournemouth scored that goal, there was a 5-10 minute period in the start of the second half where you thought, right, Bournemouth could get the second goal here. And if I still would have favoured City to win it, of course, but I think if Bournemouth had got that second goal and made it 2-2, then it would have been a lot more of an interesting game. But, you know, they don't get that goal, City get the third, and then the rest is just, it's uninteresting. It's typical Man City, result after result after result. It's a bit tiring to watch, you know, because I think for the entire league, you want to see Man City get beaten because they are operating at a completely different level to everyone else. So, it's a bit expected result. Nothing new or surprising from that game, I guess.
No, and, you know, the assists from Kevin De Bruyne and David Silva, all class there. I mean, when you got two strikers up front like Raheem Sterling and Sergio Aguero, and then the wingers or the centres delivering the ball through Kevin De Bruyne and David Silva. I mean, as you say, it's expected result, but it's also scary because if they're winning 3-1 against Bournemouth and they're getting that form up, you know, when they do play it like one of the other top sides, it's just all confidence and they'll be able to put practice into play, you know, come at the end of the crunch against the crunch sides, sort of they're building towards that ominous form.
Yeah, look, I mean, I think there's a lot that's said week in, week out about Kevin De Bruyne and David Silva, and you know, they're absolute class footballers. Obviously, Man City operates, their midfield operates very differently to how Liverpool attack, but just having those two as an outlet from your midfield, it just gives you such an extra dimension. And I think as a Liverpool fan, I think last season, you know, we lost the league because of our one result against City. You know, that game at the Etihad where we lost 2-1, where we could have and possibly should have drawn that game, we would have won the league. So I think it's pretty much going to be the same this year. You know, you can't really rely on anyone else to do you favours. I think the league's going to come down to what Liverpool themselves do against Man City. So, I mean, results like this are going to happen all season. City are going to go home and away, and they're going to beat whoever's in front of them. I mean, that's just, there's no, they'll maybe have one or two slips throughout the season, but all in all, they'll beat whoever's in front of them home and away. Liverpool just need to make sure that when they come to Anfield, we get the points. And then when we go to the Etihad, don't really drop too many points. So it's a tough one with Man City because you can't see them dropping off. You know, you can almost see them every single week getting 2+ goals every single week.
Certainly, mate. Certainly. And look, we'll move on to the result overnight. I don't even know what to make of this result because, I mean, it's sort of one of these games you go into it, you expect the Spurs to get the job done, but Newcastle, sort of that no-frills team, they really, you know, they hit you hard in defence and they're trying to get you on the counter-attack. But they ended up getting the job done, 1-0 Newcastle, and the Spurs would walk away from that one at home pretty disappointed in front of 59,000 fans. And, you know, they had the run of the mill. They had a lot of the play, but, Tottenham were unable to get the job done.
You know, with Tottenham, that's a poor loss. That's a really, really poor loss, because I think Newcastle are bad. And I think Newcastle are really going to struggle this season. I think they're going to be in the relegation scrap, and they possibly could even go down. I mean, a lot of Geordie fans might not like what I say, but they possibly could go down. For Spurs to lose at home to Newcastle is atrocious. It's just, it shows that Spurs are in a lot of trouble. You know, like we saw the same performance against Aston Villa in the first game of the season, where they went behind and they struggled for most part of the game to get to really get anything going. You know, because they brought Eriksen on against Villa, they've kind of found that extra gear before it's, you know, got them into trouble, and they've managed to score the goals and get the result. Against City as well, Spurs were really, really bad. But they've managed two shots which have gone into the goal. You know, that Lamela shot, which is a goal out of nothing, and then that Lucas Moura header, which is also, to be honest, a goal out of nothing. So Spurs have really... They've played three games of the season and they've looked tired in all of them. They've looked bereft of ideas. They've looked really short in confidence. Harry Kane doesn't look really up to it. You know, it doesn't really look up to scratch. Christian Eriksen obviously doesn't want to be there. You know, he stated clearly that he's looking to leave the club. And I think Spurs without Eriksen struggle. So... they're having a tough time at the moment, and to lose to Newcastle at home is just it's unexpected, you know.
It's atrocious. Really, I mean, if you look at this statistics, possession, they had 79.8% of possession. Newcastle only 20.2 shots on target. As you mentioned, the two to Tottenham, three to Newcastle. So obviously, when they did get an opportunity, Newcastle were able to have those shots on target. But, I mean, look, 17 shots to Tottenham Hotspurs and 8 shots only to Newcastle. It goes to show clearly they had all the domination. But at the end of the day, they walk away, you know, and 59,000 home supporters, mate. Like, it's, you know, when you've got that kind of cauldron-like atmosphere, you expect, I mean, at the very least, you expect a draw. You expect to walk away with 1 point. But from to, you know, walk away, you know, 1-0 result, not going your way. I mean, that's just massive, massive, you know, like confidence blow to the squad. And you feel that, you know, they're going to have to, as you said, they look tired. They're going to have to really do something during the week and maybe change things up a little bit for them to be more competitive. Because if you're not getting the job done at home, mate, when they go away and face, you know, some of the top four sides, you know, it could become embarrassing for them, to be frank, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's very clear that Spurs need a squad shake-up. They really do, because, I mean, just those stats alone, 79% possession and then two shots on target, that just shows that your strike force is not performing. You've literally got all of the ball and you can only get two shots. You can test the keeper twice all game. Like, that's ridiculous, you know. The fact that Newcastle have had more shots on target and they've had 21% of the ball. Like, that's ridiculous. You know, that's absolutely ridiculous. They've had more shots than targets. So I think Spurs are a side that really need a squad shakeup. But I think they've kind of got it wrong because, you know, I watched the Atletico Madrid Leganes game in La Liga. And Kieran Trippier is having a good time out there. Like, I have no idea why Spurs have let him go to Spain because, you know, I saw him in Atletico's first game. I saw him in preseason for Atletico. I watch a fair bit of Atletico Madrid. I do enjoy them. And I've seen what Kieran Trippier is doing. You know, the way he's putting the ball onto Alvaro Morata's head every time. Like, Harry Kane could do with that service. So I just don't understand. I mean, I don't understand what Spurs were kind of thinking in letting Kieran Trippier leave. And they're not really replacing him because I don't think, what's his name, Kyle Walker-Peters is ready, is I want to say good enough, but I don't think he's ready to take that first team starter mantle at Spurs at his top side. So I think you know they kind of maybe got a few things wrong in doing that. don't know what's happening with Jan Vertonghen. He's clearly Spurs' best defender, but for some reason, he hasn't been picked in any of the first three match teams. Have no idea what's going on there. There's a bit of talk about that. I think there could be a possible fallout with him and the manager. Who else? Toby Alderweireld has clearly stated as well 2 years ago that he's looking to leave the side. He's looking to leave Tottenham. Christian Eriksen as well said he's looking to leave Tottenham. So I don't really know what's going on there. Dele Alli hasn't, I mean, I think he's been injured this season, but he's, you know, he hasn't hit anywhere near the form that he hit when he first broke out a few seasons back. So it's looking a lot like Harry Kane is having to literally shoulder this entire team. Obviously, there's still Lucas Moura and Heung-Min Son who are really good footballers, but I think Harry Kane is still having to kind of do everything. And when he's not performing, Spurs don't perform. And that's really worrying for them. You know, I think they really need a bit of a shake-up in the squad, some new faces, maybe sell a few big names to fund a few other, you know, faces. I don't know. Like, I think they're having a really tough time, and that result just shows that they are very far off the pace, you know, where they're really far where they're far off where they should be. But I think they'll still get it right, you know, throughout the season, but I just don't think they'll be challenging for the title.
We're very well said, mate. Very well said. Very good analysis. And we'll look, what we'll do is we'll just look to the next round. We'll pick one game. What's one out of the next round coming up? What's one game that catches your eye and sort of one of importance? You know, obviously the season's quite a long one. What's coming up?
London Derby, mate.
Oh yeah, that's true.
Arsenal Tottenham, North London Derby, mate. Yeah, mate. Like, yeah. Yep. Yeah, that's it's the biggest fixture on the card next week. Spurs are in desperate need of a result. Arsenal started well. I think it'll be tough to judge Arsenal against Liverpool because, you know, they were never really going to get a result at Anfield. So I think we don't want to say Arsenal are looking like they look really bad against Liverpool, but that's just because they were playing Liverpool. So you don't really want to write them off yet. But the North London derby will be interesting because Spurs will have to raise their game. Otherwise, they're going to get a rollicking from Arsenal. David Luiz is going to have to be up for it because Harry Kane can and will turn him if he doesn't pitch up. So it'll definitely be, in that game, I think it'll definitely be also centered around the midfield. So if they just have protection, if they have, Arsenal fans might not be a fan of Granit Xhaka, but if you know, they have that Lucas Torreira Xhaka protection in the midfield, just to kind of stifle Spurs' midfield, you know, stifle, I think it's Ndombele, Sissoko and Harry Winks, I think, yeah. So if they can kind of stifle them three, or the creativity of Lamella, who else? Lamella or Eriksen, whoever starts.
You there, mate?
Creativity of Lamella or Eriksen, then, yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah. Keep going. Yeah, I can hear. Yep.
Yeah. So if they can just stifle that midfield, then they can kind of hope to give Spurs David Luiz, a bit of assistance against Harry Kane. It'll be an interesting game. I mean, there's a few other interesting ones, you know, like Crystal Palace Villa. I think that's an interesting game. Maybe for other reasons, because I still think Villa will struggle this season. So will Crystal Palace. And Palace are really, really bad at home. So, which is surprising because most teams are normally amazing at home. So it's surprising that Crystal Palace are, you know, really, really bad at home. So Villa will be looking for a result there. That's probably an interesting one. Apart from that, I mean, United need to get points against Southampton. I reckon they will this time, even though it's away from home. So it's a tough one. I mean, Liverpool struggled at Southampton. I think United can't afford to lose a second game in the run. They can't afford to go a third game without picking up maximum points or lose a second game in the run. Chelsea should be a bit too much for Sheffield United. Palace Villa will be interesting. Leicester, wow. Bournemouth, back Leicester there. City, of course. Newcastle Watford should be an interesting one. It's quite tough to call because Watford have started really badly. Pretty much opposite because I think last season they won their first four games or first three games and this season they've lost all three games. So them and Newcastle are 20th and 19th at the minute. So it's the two bottom clubs. They'll be an interesting one. Burnley-Liverpool, I mean, you know, you want to say that Burnley away is a tough match because it is a tough match, but I still think that Liverpool will probably just have a little bit too much for Burnley. Everton Wolves. It's a tough one. I'll go for Wolves there to get the away win, and then Arsenal Tottenham. It's a coin toss.
Definitely, mate. Definitely. So yeah, as you say, the North London derby, one to watch, and I mean it's going to be on Australian time, 1:30 a.m. on Monday morning. So I might struggle to get up and watch that.
Yeah, it'll be a tough one for you guys.
Tough one to get up for, but look, mate, I've actually made an announcement during the week. By the way, it was great. Another great chat covering week number 3 of the English Premier League. And, mate, your expertise and knowledge, I'm sure we're going to build a following in our podcast because that's what it's all about. It's the world game and everyone around the world can relate to the round ball game and we all love it. And, you know, in the last 15 years here in Australia, since the Socceroos, I've had a presence in the last 4 World Cups through the golden era of Harry Kewell and the like, Tim Cahill and all the boys.
Yeah.
Coming through that golden generation, yeah, like, you know, it's building and building. We've got the A-League. But what I want to announce is next year I've made a decision. I'm going to work my ass off to get Winston Sports Media over to the Euros 2020, mate. So, obviously, I attended...
Oh, that would be amazing.
So, obviously, I attended the World Cup in 2014, which was ridiculous. And that yeah. and that passion and that drive. I mean, these things aren't cheap, as you would know, mate, to attend... To attend, you know, the English Premier League's not cheap, let alone the FIFA, you know, style competitions. But, well, it's UEFA. But, yeah, mate, I'm going to attend it. And, you know, the reason I'm attending it is because I'm trying to grow the brand. I'm trying to cover as many sports as I can. But I don't want to just have, like, Aussie rules in me kit bag. I want to have cricket. I want to have world football.
No, fair play.
Yeah. And the more knowledge I have, the better I'm going to become. And doing podcasts like this, I'm learning things that I didn't know every week, and I'm really glad that I'm getting back into the English Premier League and finding that passion for football again. Because, mate, as I said, I fell in love with it when we made the World Cup Socceroos back in 06 in Germany, and mate, yeah. ever since, you know, through my 20s and now we're in our early 30s, mate. It's like, you know, I remember even when I was in South Africa 2010, mate, that ripping opening goal, you know, to the South Africans. I can't remember who scored it, but. Things like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, Sabalala scored it, yeah.
I remember jumping out of my seat. It was the early hours of the morning over here. And I remember all those little moments, mate. You don't realise we get older, but you fall in love with the game. You wait, you know, it could be boring as batshit for not, you know, 80 minutes. But, mate, you wait for that one moment, that one second yeah. that can change a whole result of a game. And that's what it's all about, man.
No, it really is. And one thing I would say, like, that I wish the A-League, speaking of going back to the A-League, like one thing that I would wish that you guys would do is get rid of the playoff system, man. Like get rid of the grand finals and the playoff. I mean, I get that it's great to have a grand final and have, you know, the whole specter about it. But if a team dominates the entire season and finishes 10 points clear, I think it's a bit harsh to now put them up in a knockout tournament. You know, like I think it was a few seasons ago where Sydney, I think were 10 points clear of the league, but then they got knocked out by Melbourne in the playoffs, and it's just like it's a bit harsh that you know.
They got robbed. They got robbed. They lost 1-0, and the goal should never have been a goal. It was an offside, clearly offside.
I think I watched that game actually because I was still in New Zealand then, and it was like, mate, what a horrible way to, because it's harsh, right? Because you put all your effort in to be perfect for the entire season. And then you get one team, you know, that just needs to make sure they finish in the eight. Or not the eight. Yeah, to make sure we just finish in the eight. And if you can sneak into the eight, you can still be champions,
top six,
even though you finish. Sorry, top six. Yeah, I'm thinking AFL. AFL now. Yeah, I'm thinking, yeah. But
right,
yeah, so you finish. Yeah, so all you need to do is just finish in the six. Just finish six. And even if you're 20 points behind, you know, the team in first, you could still end up with the trophy. And I think that's harsh because imagine calling Arsenal the champions of England after finishing 35 points behind Man City because they beat them in a playoff match, you know, and that because they finished, or Man United because they finished sixth, 35 points behind. So I think once Australia gets rid of the playoff system, it'll maybe, I don't know, at least make it a bit more fairer. But I guess it does bring fanfare to have the whole grand final and to have, you know, the whole build up of the postseason and all of that. So it is what it is, I guess.
Certainly, mate. And look, mate, it's, yeah, as I said, we can build this podcast. It's going to be awesome. And it just gives us Winter Sports Media a different perspective and something to look forward to every week and different interests to keep an eye out off the results over the weekend, mate. So, yeah, so that's the announcement. I'm going to head to the Euros in 2020, mate, and obviously I'm going to start saving up and get over there and bring some great content. So, mate, once again, pleasure talking to you on Winnow and Bean Talk EPL. And, mate, keep on over there. And, mate, I hope you enjoy the day ahead. It was a pretty nice day, sunny day here in Melbourne, mate. And what is the weather like over there, mate? Is it nice and sunny or...?
Oh, mate, it's beautiful, isn't it? Like, it's really beautiful weather. It's just, it's got a bit of a wind. There's a bit of a wind blowing, but, I mean, not a single cloud in the sky. I think I might go play 9 holes tomorrow. Just once the wind dies down, but it's a really, really, really beautiful day out. Yeah, always is, I guess, but it is what it is, mate. Can't really complain too much, yeah.
Well, mate, Bean, enjoy golf, enjoy life, and enjoy the weather over in South Africa, mate, and... it's been a pleasure again, and mate, I'll upload this tonight. And keep on with the old football results, mate, and we'll have a chat next week.
Bueno, thank you very much for having me, bro. Chat soon.
Talk soon, mate. I'll speak to you next week. Ciao, mate. Buen vendo.
Cheers, buddy.
Ciao. Bye.
Ciao. Bye.